Just after 1 o'clock on Sportsnet 590, the Fan, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you on a Tuesday edition of Smith and Jones as we get you set for another full evening of sports coverage right here on Sportsnet 590, the Fan, and of course on the Sportsnet Television Network. And counting down to the tip-off tomorrow night between the Toronto Raptors and the Miami Heat, the first of two as the Raptors will face the Heat on both Wednesday and Friday. And Jonesy, the Raptors coming off a victory last night over the Dallas Mavericks. We're going to discuss that at length in a few minutes' time with former Toronto Raptor and Sportsnet analyst Alvin Williams later on in the show. Much more on the NBA as we look league-wide as well with ESPN analyst, former NBA head coach David Fizdale. One of the things I wanted to start with, though, before we kind of got into quite a bit of basketball over the course of the next hour or so, a couple of things. I found it interesting, Jonesy, maybe this is just kind of a bit of a selfish story, but it's just kind of giving folks a glimpse of, peeking behind the curtain, I suppose, just a little bit. Being in the building last night for the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Winnipeg Jets, and we were up on the 300 level, in the Raptors practice facility. For those that haven't heard, I'm sure you've watched Raptor games, but if for some reason you're hearing this for the first time, with the Raptors down in Tampa, myself and Jonesy and the broadcast crew on the TV side as well, whether it's the TSN broadcast with Matt and Jack or the Sportsnet broadcast with Matt and Leo, and the full Sportsnet coverage for pre- and post-game as well and halftime, it's all done from the Raptors' old practice facility, the gym that is inside Scotiabank Arena up on the 300 level, right outside sections 317, 318. So the gym has been converted into this giant broadcast studio that houses both television and radio, and that's where we are up on that 300 level. But last night, just out the VOM, out 317, out 18, out on the ice, down on the event level, the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Winnipeg Jets. So we had a chance to sort of stick our nose out for, what, maybe 2-3 minutes, Jonesy, at most, before the Raptor game tipped off. And it was our first experience with Major League Baseball, National Football League, NBA, or NHL in a bubble environment, in an empty arena with no fans. And I got to tell you, man, it was weird to just stand there at section 318 for, again, like, 2-3 minutes at most, folks, just standing there kind of, peeking in on the action for about a 2-3 minute stretch in the first period. It was bizarre to see a professional game going on with nobody in the stands.
It was crazy, Eric. And I stuck my head in there. You and I, obviously, at different times, we weren't there at the same time, the whole social distancing thing. You were, I think you were getting ready to record the opening at about 7:24 or something like that. And I had been running from the bathroom and I heard the cutting of the skates on the ice and the stopping and the puck hitting sticks. And I thought, I'm probably not supposed to, but let me take a step up and peek at the game. After all, I am a Leaf fan. And, there was Marner with the puck coming up and I'm kind of watching and I looked around, it's like, there's nobody here. Like, normally the place would be buzzing. I think the Leafs might have been on a power play or something. And like, it was kind of like, for me, playing pickup in a gym with nobody watching. You're hearing, you heard the skates and the sticks, and you could hear guys calling for the puck and slapping their stick on the ice and all of the stuff that you hear when you're playing pickup. Same in a gym, nobody there. And I thought, it must be difficult for these guys. It's so sterile. It's so antiseptic, the environment. Mm-hmm. Yet, they kept playing through it. And that was it. I mean, the end of their second period coincided with our halftime. It's not like we could go out and watch anymore.
I didn't see anything else the rest of the night.
I literally saw like a minute and a half, and I thought, I better get back in there. We got to sit down. And, it would be like us, kind of the way we deke out for the national anthem at the start of the game, right, and use the bathroom, because, once you sit down, you're there till halftime. But it just seemed weird. And, there was nobody in the stands. There were a couple people down at one of the entrances to the VOM, kind of,
where the Zamboni
watching
comes
and
up. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was it. Like, we were on the side of the benches, so it's not like you could even, like, I couldn't even tell if coaches were wearing masks or whatever. It was surreal. And that building normally buzzing, E. That building is during a Raptor game and a Leaf game. It's normally buzzing, and there was nothing, absolutely nothing.
Well, and when you're up on that 300 level, I mean, this might sound stupid to say, might sound obvious to say, but you're obviously closer to the ceiling than you are to the ice. So you're when you walk out the VOM, I think you're roughly at about row 5 or 6, maybe. So you're again closer to the ceiling, and thus you're closer to the speakers, and you're looking down on the action as opposed to, you know, sitting down below in the lower bowl or on the floor at a Raptor game or against the boards and being able to look up. So when you're up that high and you've got those speakers, the white noise and the crowd noise that was being pumped into the arena while play was on to try and create that atmosphere of fans in the stands buzzing, I give them credit. And it's obviously not just the folks at Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment and Scotiabank Arena. This is happening around the National Hockey League, around the NBA, around the NFL, you know, pumping in that crowd noise. But then being able to ride the levels and ride the emotions and having different sounds. Like when the Leafs were on a break when I was watching for those 2-3 minutes, Jonesy, as they were coming down the ice and they had an odd man rush, there was a difference. It wasn't just kind of the, you know, the in the background. There was you could get that rise of excitement from the crowd, quote unquote, based on whatever special effects and sound effects the game ops folks were working with. So I found that interesting, and that's about the only emotion or vibe that you can play off, I suppose, as players, because you're right, it is a very sterile environment, no pun intended, and maybe that's the best analogy. It's sterile literally and figuratively in terms of the setting and the vibe and the feeling inside the building. And I can see why, again, with the caveat, as I continue to say over and over, as long as it's safe and healthy and proper to do so and it can be done safely and properly, et cetera, I can see why teams around pro sports are pushing their provincial or state or federal national governments to allow fans, even if it's 5%, 10%, 20%, because what a difference it must make to have a couple of thousand versus nobody, because it's got to be difficult to keep that focus in that type of environment.
Well, we had Sal Capaccio yesterday, right? And he said at the Bills game, 6,700 sounded like 67,000. And, you know, even the other watching, you know, my Browns on Sunday when the Chiefs needed a big stop, there were guys turning around and they probably had the same percentage of fans at Arrowhead Stadium. But guys are turning around and flapping their arms and waving them from the waist to the ceiling, to the sky, saying, come on, get up, make noise. And, you're a player, a professional athlete. You're used to having the crowd around and kind of feeding off the emotion of the crowd and, you know, having that slight shift in your personality as a showman. It must be very, very different for them. Very different.
Well, speaking of the Toronto Maple Leafs, maybe this is a good chance to just remind the folks that are listening right now that we are giving away a chance for you to virtually meet Joe Thornton. So tune in to Sportsnet 590 The Fan every weekday for your keywords, then text them to 590-590 to enter. Your next keyword is going to be announced today at 4:20 during Writer's Block. For more details on how to meet Jumbo Joe, visit sportsnet.ca/590. I know, Jones, you've got an eye on Jumbo Joe. This is the first thing you asked me last night when the Maple Leaf game ended and the Leafy was 1-3-1. You said, how'd my guy Jumbo Joe do? He didn't get on the scoreboard in terms of a goal, but certainly has looked pretty good in the first few games, handful of games for the Toronto Maple Leafs and the veteran leadership that he and guys like Wayne Simmons provide.
Those are my two dudes this year for the Leafs. I'm watching the vets, man. Wayne Simmons, he's like that basketball player. You want to play inside, I'll play inside. You want to stretch it out, like he can score goals. He's not afraid. And I'm not, you know me, E, I'm not a guy who's into fighting, but if it's going to be part of the game, there's a guy that, you know, he's an all-round player. And you know, that's both he and Thornton. I love the potential leadership that they're going to provide. So I'm, and look, the key word should be like Jumbo Joe or, you know, consummate professional. I don't know who's making up the key words at the station, but let me do that. I'll give you words. But then again, people knowing me would like not listen in. They wouldn't listen for the key words. They'll just like, oh, Jonesy, he's going to pass it. It's third and two. He's going to throw it. Like, we know what he's going to do. He's predictable.
One thing just to wrap up this conversation, as we spent the first 10-odd minutes here talking about the National Hockey League and Toronto Maple Leafs and talking about Jumbo Joe and Wayne Simmonds. After the late hit last night on Mitch Marner, on his empty netter, trust me, Wayne Simmonds will factor into the next matchup between the Jets and Leafs big time. Wayne Simmonds will be heard next time Winnipeg and Toronto go toe-to-toe, as he'll no doubt be dropping the gloves, sticking up for his guy Mitch Marner. All right, moving aside from
mental
the Leafs and back
mental,
to the Toronto
mental
Raptors.
Mental note, right, Ian?
Yes, mental note, mental note. Yeah, hey, mark it down. Tell me if I'm wrong. Next time the Leafs and the Jets play, tell me if I'm wrong if Simmonds isn't dropping the gloves and you know, exacting a little bit of a revenge and some retribution, you know, on behalf of Mitch Marner. The Raptors last night with the big win, a decisive win over a quality opponent, the Dallas Mavericks. And do a talk about that game and big picture about the start of the season for the Raptors, as they seem to have turned a corner a little bit right now. Former Raptor and our colleague here at Sportsnet, Alvin Williams. Al, thanks for the time as always.
Thanks for having me, guys. How are you?
We're good, Al.
We're doing good. Well, Al. Doing well. Hey, I'm going to let Jonesy jump in here in a second, Al, because it's more his story to tell, or more his analysis, I suppose, to break down. But during the game last night, he mentioned to me a couple of times, you know, I'm doing, you know, calling the game and Jonesy's jumping in. And all of a sudden he starts talking about how Luka Doncic is dogging it. And I started watching Doncic more and more as the game went on. And I said to Jonesy at one point, we had a conversation on the air, you know, he's one of the stars in the game, and I've watched a ton of Mavericks games as a result of wanting to watch Doncic and seeing him on national TV, et cetera, et cetera. I have not seen him play with such laziness that he seemed to show last night. And Jonesy, I'll let you jump in, because you talked about just looking like, what, like an old man shuffling around out there with his bathrobe on.
Well, and it ties into our previous end of the NBA NHL conversation. See, my guy Alvin Williams is a Philly guy, and when stuff like that goes down, like if somebody gives it to you on the playground like that, and they beat you, the next time you get on the court, you're watching that guy. You're like, yo, I got something for you. We you're not gonna get away with that. And I look at Luka the same way in that sense. Like, dude, you're supposed to be one of the best players in the game. The best players give it to you every night. I know you had, you know, 33, 15, and 16 the night before in a loss against Chicago. But I'm sorry, man. That don't count. Those numbers are great, but you lost the game. And then you show up the next night in Toronto and against Toronto, and Stanley Johnson and OG are in your kitchen. They're playing you box and one. Al, you know what that's like. You get in the guy's kitchen, and he starts to get frustrated, and he's throwing elbows. And basically, to me, the defense, and maybe he's tired, but Luka broke. Because he was not running back on defense. Like I said to E. Al, he was shuffling like an old man in bedroom slippers. But you know, you lose the ball, you don't sprint back. Those are the things that kill you the next day in the video room. Am I right or not? And you lose respect for teammates.
No, you definitely notice those things. And, you know, more times than often, unfortunately, it happens. And now we get to see these guys play more and more. You start seeing tendencies. It was always something you hear a lot about certain players, but you actually notice that they didn't give it their all. And, you know, because they're so talented, a lot of times you can get away with it. But now when the eyes are on you and your teams are taking losses, now it's more noticeable. So it's a lot of things about Luka that I noticed. And that's a big part. I saw him get frustrated throwing elbows when they picked him up full court. I see him, and one thing he's always done since he's gotten to the league, you know, he's complained. He's a complainer. And when you are a leader of a team and you're leading for an ultimate goal to win, your emotions and your demeanor on the court should always be even keeled. Kevin Willis always told me that. You know, that was one of the things that my vet would tell me, stay even keeled, young fella. And he's one of those guys that shows his emotions a lot. He complains a lot about every call. And that takes away from his ability. Now, is he talented? Hell yeah. Does he do things on the court that, you know, we haven't seen in a while from, you know, a player at that size and that age? Exactly. But there's also flaws there. So he has a lot of growing up to do if we want to take it to the next level.
Al, when you look beyond just your teammates, how does that opinion or that reputation impact you or affect you around the league? Because it's still a tight brotherhood, it's a tight fraternity. Sure, there are guys, I'm sure, that don't like each other or maybe don't respect each other, but for the most part, you know, guys know each other, guys like each other, they're slapping fives, they're hugging after games. It's you know, it's a brotherhood. But when you get that type of rep where maybe you're a complainer or you're a guy that's constantly on the officials and you're always whining about stuff and you're getting feisty and chippy and throwing elbows when you're frustrated or not getting your way. Does that filter around to other teams as well and impact their opinion of you as a player?
Yeah, the players always have opinions. They have their opinions, but, you know, players, they're a lot different than, you know, back when, even before when I was playing. Even when I was playing, I didn't think it was bad, but, you know, players would really call you out, or they would test your chin, or they would put a little pressure on you so that those characteristics would come out. You know, they know how to get your goat. They know if you had an injury, they'd go right after that injury. If you had something mentally lacking, they'll talk trash to you. However, so I'm not sure of the game. I've been so far removed on the court with the game, but the players seem more of a – it seems like they're more enamored with one another's skill, with each other, and it's just not that same relationship between the players of yesteryear and the players of now. But and the players that are Luka Doncic's, like, talent level and his notoriety and everything, you know, they get validated a lot by us, the media. You know, that's all sometimes they look for is validated by the media, how many all-star games and how many, you know, first teams they get. And a lot of times they don't care what other people think. They're still going to get their contract. They're still going to play their style of play. They're not going to be forced to do anything different. And you see it. You see it all over. I take someone like a Ben Simmons who's received a lot and still faces a lot of criticism for his game not being as complete. So what do you expect him to do? You think he's going to change his game, or he's going to continue doing what he gets success by? You know, he's been an all-star without shooting. He's been a max player without shooting. He gets all the notoriety without shooting. So players, you know, they really – I won't say they don't care, but they have a pathway that they're on, and I don't think too much is going to deter them from continuing what they're doing or their ultimate goal.
Let me kind of stay a little bit with that, because somebody hit Eric and I on Twitter and said, well, he was tired from the, you know, the 38, 15, and 16 or whatever the night before on the back-to-back. And I thought, nah, come on, you got to play. And then I thought, no, that's valid. He gave everything to try and get his team a win after being down like 18 or 19 against the Bulls. Didn't happen, put up great numbers. They fly. It's a back-to-back. I get some of that. And I spoke to an NBA coach last night who said, it's not like back in the day where you guys not only played all these games, and let's face it, the games are compressed now in succession because of a shortened schedule, 72 games in a shortened period of time. He said, but we practiced every day. And he doesn't think the players of this generation, as much as they work out and they're, quote, in shape, are in basketball shape to handle that kind of rigor. Thoughts on that, Al?
Yeah, it's right in line. But, I say you can get in shape, but they're not conditioned. They're not conditioned. What I mean by conditioned, that's more being prepared, mentally conditioned for the back-to-back. Conditioned to have 38, 15, and whatever, and then do it again the next night, or conditioned to carry your team to a playoffs, or condition like you can do sprints, you can practice, you can do it, but if you're not conditioned mentally and physically, then that's where you're going to be lacking. So I think the best players that we've seen that come out and the superstars and the guys that have been winning at a high level for a long time through history, I think they ultimately became conditioned to be those type of winners and those type of players. And he's young, man. He's not going to be perfect every night. He's going to have those ups and downs. He's going to have psychological challenges, I'm sure. He's going to be tired physically. So, you know, you just want to have people grow into those roles. And what we do a lot of times, we put people in position too early or give them that stage too early. May not just be ready for that. And is he a great talent? Is he going to put up numbers and he's going to help his team win? Definitely, but you still have to be conditioned in order to go to that next level.
Speaking with Alvin Williams, Al, shifting our attention to a little bit more on the court, X's and O's with the Toronto Raptors and their victory last night and their record now sitting at 5-8 as they get set for the Miami Heat. Nick Nurse was saying earlier today on his Zoom call, media availability, he acknowledged that he has basically settled into a rotation now, with the starting five and Baines kind of being a loose starter in a sense with Boucher playing the bulk of the minutes. Boucher, Powell, and Stanley Johnson coming off the bench. Al, Stanley is a really interesting guy, and Jonesy and I, again, spoke at great length about him during our broadcast last night. He gets a ton of credit from both of us, I think from you probably as well, for the way that he just sort of has stuck with it. You know, he was hurt last year. He was out of the rotation. He continued to grind and grind and grind, and here he is now with an opportunity, and he looks pretty damn good in that sort of defensive role coming off the bench. And as Jonesy, you noted last night, he looks like a guy that we saw a couple of years ago locking down DeMar DeRozan and locking down other guys in the league and really bringing something to the table. And this now is the guy maybe that the Raptors thought they were getting when they brought him in last year.
Yeah, he's settling in. And it is good to see because, you know, even when I was a scout, when I was scouting a few years ago when he first came into the league and was playing for Detroit, he would get the label of somebody who's underachieving, who thought they were better than he really was. And that was just coming from a few sources. I'm not saying that was the overall, you know, sentiment on him, but that was words that I was getting. And you see, that's not the case at all right now. Whether if it was, he's matured to a point or he's recognized to a point, like, this is how I can get on the floor. And as a player, that's all, as a coach, that's all you can ask for. A person is recognizing their role and how they can be most impactful. And on a defensive end, energy-wise, he's bringing exactly what the team needed, especially at that time, and it's going to be for the rest of the season because he is bringing that person. He's that person that's not afraid to guard anyone. He's not afraid to get on the floor for a loose ball. He's not afraid to stick his nose in, fight over screens, and he's physical. So that's a piece that can always bring a team, especially a struggling team. You just always need that spark sometimes, and then people can follow that lead. And it's good for coaching as well because it gives you that, you know what you're going to get every day. So he's grown into the role as well, and it's always good when the team starts playing better when you're out there on the floor. So it says a lot.
Al, Raptors won 3 in a row now, and as you mentioned just a minute ago, kind of struggling. I mean, the record could be better. A couple of tough 1-point losses where they had good shots at the end. I mean, you know, if those go in and instead of 5-8, they're 7-6. There's a difference there. But 3 in a row for this team, has that kind of recalibrated them? Like, it looks like the last few games they've kind of learned how to win again. And this is something that I've been on, just knowing what to do. And they've got a new group and they're all looking to do. What should these 3 wins kind of right the ship for them and have them say, okay, all right, we got this again. We know what we're doing. Time to reel off 8 out of 10 or, you know, 9 out of 12 here in the next stretch.
It goes back to that even keel statement that Kevin Willis told me. I was just talking about, I think we couldn't get too low when they were losing. Of course, it was moments you could take away from those games. You can say this team just doesn't have it, or you could say, you know, this team is, they know how to get leads. They're getting leads. They have opportunities to win, but they got to learn how to finish it. And I think all of those things start coming about through the course of the season. And what you're seeing is, you know, those leads aren't being lost as quickly, right? Or they're not being lost at all. They're maintaining. And, you know, they're getting some steady performances from the bench now. And, you know, Kyle Lowry, of course, he's playing. You know, Pascal's been up and down, but, you know, he's still showing some moments where he's trying to get back into that rhythm. Freddie right now is not shooting as well, but, you know, once these things start coming about, then you start feeling more and more confident. But I believe if I'm thinking of Nick, he's starting to feel like he's coming into that role and that lineup. He's starting to become more and more comfortable and more. He's seeing more and more consistent play and different trends. The numbers may be speaking to it now. You have a bigger case sample. You may have some of those things as well. So I do like the fact that they won the 3 in a row, and they're learning, as you mentioned, Jonesy, they look like they're learning how to win these games when it comes down to it. In the last night's game, playing against a Dallas team who not high expectations, but they have great players that people are, you know, they're playing. That's always good to get a win against a team like a Dallas Mavericks.
Speaking with Alvin Williams. Al, it's interesting. If I asked you this question, well, maybe not a week ago, but 2 weeks ago certainly, you probably wouldn't answer Chris Boucher. But if I were to ask you who's the most important person on this team right now outside of the big 3, outside of Van Vliet, Lowry, and Siakam, would you agree that right now it's Chris Boucher just based on what he provides that the other bigs aren't providing? I mean, you know, somebody might have answered, OG Anunoby and his defense, and now he's starting to make shots, and Norm Powell and his punch off the bench. But with so little coming from the middle from Baines or Len, Boucher has been unbelievable, and Al doing it on both ends of the floor as well.
Yeah, it'd be hard to argue that. It'd be hard because the way he's playing, and man, he's playing like a young Serge Ibaka now, you know, with a jump shot, you know, defending the basket, playing defensively minded, doing all these things. Of course, he's not the body type, but he just reminds me a little bit of something that Serge was bringing the team from the offensive side, being able to knock down the outside shot and being trusted, right? Being trustworthy. So, but I do believe it's a collective group outside of that big three, outside of the three players that you expect to do it night in and night out. I still believe that there is the OG and the Norms and, you know, Stanley getting in there and Chris Boucher, but he's the guy that he's playing the most consistent basketball. Norm is picking it up as well, but Chris Boucher is giving the team a lift that I'm not sure that they think that they would be thinking that they need it right now from him, because he's doing a great job of being consistent most and foremost.
Al, what's the impact of Kyle Lowry on that? And everybody's talking about the emerging chemistry with Lowry and Boucher. But, I mean, I look at Kyle, who's been taught the game in a kind of an old-school fashion where you always look for your big guy. You feed the dog so he'll guard the yard. I mean, Kyle did that he played well with Mark. He tried to get the ball to Serge. Here he is doing it with Boucher. He's always been a guy that, he got JV involved when he was here. Isn't that part of the old school point guard teaching?
It definitely is, man. That's how we were raised, you know.
Yeah.
Because we played with the big men that if you didn't give them the ball, they'd smack you upside your head. So that's something that was embedded in us. But Kyle is one of the few guys in the NBA that plays at that level that you could put in any situation and his game will not suffer. Kyle can play with anyone, and that's why he's so special. He's not, you know, who you might look at, Damian Lillard, all these guards that you name, and there's no slight to any of those guys, but I know just for a fact that no matter if it's Kyle and DeMar, Kyle is going to do what he needs to do to get the team. If it's Kawhi coming in, and a lot of people, I'm not sure if he got the credit that he deserves for someone who played with Kawhi Leonard and was had to go to the back seat. Rarely would get shots. Then Kawhi would not play a game, and he would have to be the man from the scoring side. Every day it was something different for Kyle. So that just showed how professional he was to take that role, and coming from the role that he had as the man that could do whatever he wanted to do the year before and years before, for him to step into that. So Kyle is the guy who's, you know, always driving the car. He's the ignition, and he's the guy that's going to get everyone involved. And he's just that leader. He's grown into that role, and he's one of the best that I've seen do that in a very long time. So you have to take your hat off to him. And the players, I'm sure, they really appreciate him.
Hey, Al, and we appreciate your time today, man. Thanks for joining us, as always. And busy week with the Raptors this week, playing two against the Heat, then two against the Pacers. And Sportsnet has a number of those games, and we'll see you on the coverage of those tilts as well. Al, thanks for this.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me, as always.
Thanks, Al.
There is Alvin Williams, former Toronto Raptor analyst, with us here at Sportsnet. We'll step aside for the break, and when we come back, we'll keep our eyes focused on the NBA, and we'll chat with the ESPN analyst, former NBA head coach David Fizdale, on Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome back to Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. The Raptors again coming off the victory last night over the Dallas Mavericks, getting set for the first of two against the Heat tomorrow. You can see that game on Sportsnet. We'll have the call of the second game of the Heat and Raptors right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan later in the week. Joining us on the line right now, though, to talk, not just talk Raptors, but look around the NBA in general. A lot of stories, a lot of things happen around in the association as we're almost a month into the 2020-2021 season. Former NBA head coach, ESPN analyst David Fizdale. Coach, thanks for the time today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Fiz, always great to talk to you, and it's been a while since Eric and I have traveled with the team, and I think back to the last time I saw you was March in Golden State of last year in San Francisco, and that's been it, man. We've been housebound, Eric and I, man. We haven't moved. And
all of us.
I heard one of your pieces yesterday on a national outlet in the U.S., And I wanted to ask you what it's like. And I know you have a very high social consciousness. And I wanted to ask you what it was like coaching, especially on Martin Luther King Day, but being the cradle of all of that stuff that Dr. King, you know, kind of put together. And coaching Memphis and playing on MLK Day. You weren't doing it yesterday, obviously, but some memories and some meaningful things about being involved on that day.
Yeah, I think it held a higher honor being the coach of the Grizzlies. And I'm sure Coach Jenkins feels this now. And I'm sure Coach Pierce feels it in Atlanta, but it's a moment that you take, that you realize historically what the day means and the position that you hold and, you know, what this human being stood for. And for me, you know, to be able to be the coach of the Grizzlies on and coach today, you know, it helped, you know, and you probably heard me say this, you know, before, but it held extra significance for me because, you know, I think about why Dr. King was killed and what, you know, why was he in Memphis? And, you know, he was there fighting for sanitation workers' rights. And here I am, two generations removed from, you know, my grandfather, who was a sanitation worker in Los Angeles his whole life, who fled Jim Crow as a young man out of Starkville, Mississippi. And so, you know, that does not escape me. That is a burial. It's right in my present, and I'm very aware of where I am and what that means, the significance of that. And so that was such a huge honor for me, and it really, you know, when it all came together, it really put me in a position that I felt like I had no other choice but to be active in the community and active about, you know, human rights and social justice.
Speaking with David Fizdale, Coach, it's not really the same conversation, same topic, but kind of in a loose way, in the same vein. When you look ahead to tomorrow, and I mean, this is, you know, two Canadian guys asking this question, but at the same time,
hey, he's got a connection. He's got a connection.
Yeah,
he's got a big connection.
I'm an unofficial Canadian. So you know, I know.
I know the story as well, but I was going in a different direction with the presidential inauguration tomorrow. What kind of impact do you think that will have on many players, coaches, staff members, et cetera, around the NBA, let alone just the fellow American, the transition of office tomorrow, considering the man that at least is in office right now for, less than 24 hours now, is the man that was at the forefront of a lot of the conversations and a lot of the movements, a lot of the protests over the course of not just this summer, but the last 4 years. And what sort of impact do you think it will have on the league and so many of its players, finally seeing him removed and a new office taking over?
Well, I think the league will have seen the fruits of its labor in a lot of ways pay off. That you know, they got to witness on a really intimate scale the power of democracy and how democracy held under its most, you know, the most pressure it's probably faced in our lifetime for sure. And so I think that's going to be uplifting for them. It's going to be empowering for them to continue to work harder in their communities to create change and to impact change. I think out of this whole thing that I know a lot of people see the negative of the guy that's leaving office, but what it did was reveal a lot of our warts as a country. It's going to force us into a mode of reconciliation. But it also has empowered a young generation of leaders that now will stand up in the worst faces of tyranny and ugliness. You know, we got a generation, especially in our league, of leaders that we can really be proud of.
Yeah, Fizz, I know you were in Miami when the guys donned the hoodies over Trayvon Martin. And the NBA is really socially conscious, no question. I want to jump, and we got you here to talk some basketball. I can't let you get away without asking about James Harden going to Brooklyn. You guys played them in the finals when they were all together with Westbrook, Harden, and Durant. And Harden said, "We were kids then, we're men now," and he and Durant are together.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
How do you see that playing out with or without Kyrie Irving, who, you know, may or may not be constantly in the mix?
Well, one, his statement is absolutely correct. Those are not the guys we beat in the finals all those years ago. So what you're seeing is Kevin Durant, former MVP, finals MVP, you know, one of the most, I mean, come on, this guy's probably one of the greatest scorers, if not the greatest scorer the league has ever seen. Maybe not by numbers, but by effectiveness. No, you got to put him up there. And then you're talking about James Harden, the ultimate offensive machine, the guy that you cannot make a mistake on, and now he's on a team full of shooters, playmakers, and guys that don't have, you know, that can take the weight off of him from a night-to-night basis. And, you know, with Kyrie, I expect him to win the East. Without Kyrie, they still should be contending. But to be fair, that team did not have a training camp together, and it's going to take them some time. They're going to probably hit a bump, maybe two during the season. And I think if they can get Kyrie back and if they can limit the off-the-court noise, they, with the talent that they have and the staff, the coaching staff that they have a real shot at winning the title.
Coach, first of all, I want whatever diet plan James Harden's on, because it looked like he lost about 40 pounds in 7 days from the pictures I saw in Houston to the way he looks now. He looks slim and trim, the way he's slipping and sliding out there on the floor right now. Putting that aside, you just mentioned the coaches that they have. How difficult do you think the job, or how easy, because of the talent they have, the job that Steve Nash has right now, trying to keep this together and manage the personalities, let alone manage the talent? And obviously, you know, I know he's got a veteran staff beside him with his assistants, but for a first-time head coach, talk to me about the challenges for Steve Nash.
No, and I think people look at the team because of the talent and think that it's just easy, and it's not. It is not just easy, because for them, it's championship or bust. And so that's a lot of pressure to have on you. But I think that, you know, ultimately Steve is a guy that has, you know, done it at the highest levels as a player. He surrounded himself with great basketball minds. You know, D'Antoni, just coach James Harden. You can't even put into account how valuable that is. Ime Udoka is going to be a head coach before you can blink. I grew up with Jacques Vaughn. I still say to this day, a lot of people don't know this. Jacques Vaughn is one of the great basketball minds out there. He thinks the game in a way that I have not been around, and he's been that way since the sixth grade. And so these guys, they have a staff that can go with the talent, that can coach the talent, that have the respect of the players. And so I'm looking at these guys saying the bottom line at the end of the day for them is, can they keep the off-the-court crap out of the way, right? Because they're a lightning rod. And so it's not going to be about the talent. You can already see the offense fits. You know, all these guys can dribble, pass, shoot. They've already shown an ability to trust. I think it's going to come down. When we're going to see if it all really works is in the playoffs, when they face somebody really formidable for 7 games and they get squeezed. Can they trust in those moments? Can they believe in each other? Can their defense hold? And those are going to be the fundamentals that Steve is preaching to them, that they have to hammer home every single day. And I think he can do that. And I think he will be able to manage the egos, because you're talking about, again, 2-time MVP, self-made player. And by the way, I forgot to mention Amari Stoudemire, greatest roller this league's ever seen. So, yeah, he's on the coaching staff as well. So, you know, I really think they're put together to win. I think Steve is going to face those challenges. face them down well, and we're going to see some exciting ball out of them.
Fizz, how much have you had an eye on the Raptors? They got off to a bit of a rocky start. They've won three in a row now. Alvin Williams was just talking about kind of being even keel and, you know, pushing the ball forward and moving the ball down the road and you know, not panicking. But it's got to feel good for them to win three in a row, especially when you've got championship pieces to kind of put yourself back on track. You, when the big three got together in Miami, you guys started out 7-8. Everybody was like, oh, right. It may not work. It may not work. And then four straight finals later, it was a little different. Right. I mean, this is not the same, but a team that knows how to win, they don't forget that, do they?
No, they do not. And none of those guys are what I would call old, right? You know, their young core starting to build up around Lowry. I think what you saw early on and what your fan base saw early on was a team in adjustment. A team that has 1 year lost the MVP guy who helped you win the finals, right? And then the next year you lose both of your stretch bigs that can defend. And so that's a huge – that's pretty big, you know, when you talk about going from winning a title to losing those pieces. And so they're adjusting right now, and they're starting to figure out who they have to be without those guys. And what you're seeing is they're starting to figure it out, you know, winning three in a row. And you know, guys, I would really – you know, this is something I would watch if I'm you guys all season. Because of the unique nature of COVID – empty arenas, things like that. Watch the records and the parity throughout the league, you know, and see if teams are playing, you know, incredible that you didn't expect, or are players that you didn't expect to play well playing better because there's no crowd. I think that's going to be interesting to pay attention to as you go through the league, right? But I think as the season goes on for the Raptors, what you're going to see if they can stay healthy is they're going to figure out their new team, and they're going to really get good fast because they got a coach that's used to coaching like that from the G League, pulling players together on the fly and building chemistry. And so, no, I would not panic about the Raptors, the championship pedigree that surrounds them, that's in their veins, and, you know, I wouldn't want to play them, that's for sure.
You know, Coach, this kind of ties in, I think, to what you were just talking about, shifting gears from the Raptors for a second and just sort of looking big picture to every team in the league. In the last 30 minutes or so, I saw something come across Twitter that, you know, Celtics big man Robert Williams returned to practice today after testing positive for COVID-19 a few weeks ago. And he said today that he experienced flu-like symptoms while battling COVID, but he also revealed to the press, to the media, his daughter's mother, and his own mother all tested positive for COVID-19 as well. The mental impact of the pandemic, not just the, you know, playing in empty arenas and the Raptors playing down in Tampa and whatever else, but battling the virus yourself, let alone your family members, how much does that then impact the on-floor, on-court play and performance throughout the year?
Well, that's my point. And that's why I only cut off just so I wasn't long-winded. But there is another element to not just empty arenas and all of that stuff, but one, your roster being depleted, right? We've seen games postponed. We've seen teams, you know, playing with eight guys, you know. And while these guys are sick and while these guys are at home, they're dealing with family members that are sick. They're dealing with the stresses, and especially after you see guys, you know, God forbid, Carl Anthony Towns, his whole family, and just, you know, you just never want to see something like that. It's the most awful thing you could ever imagine. And if you don't think these players don't put themselves in his shoes, especially when they get it or their family members start to get it around them, then you have no empathy. You don't understand the human mind and how it works in the human condition. So, yes, it is a weight. It is a stress. You stress about bringing it home. You stress about bringing it to the locker room. You know, it's just a lot of new normals that we're going to have to deal with until hopefully the vaccine and everything else kicks in. But, you know, all of that stuff, I think, will weigh into what you're going to see at the end of the year as a unique season. And, you know, I think it'll be different than the bubble in its own way. It'll have its own kind of different ups and downs. But we're already starting to see things play out that way. And analytically, I want you guys to watch the role players and tell me if we have more role players playing at a higher clip. That's going to be interesting to watch because they don't have the pressure of the crowd, right? That's the difference between role and greatness. Is greatness performs, they want that crowd. Sometimes those role guys can't perform in that high-level environment. Only the best of the best role players. So that'll be interesting to watch as well.
Fizz, I know we got to go, E, but you just opened up a can of worms that I want to get to. The next time we players and the bubble last year and the surprises in the playoffs because they didn't have to go into hostile arenas and all that. So that's the first question the next time we get you back on, all right?
And I want to say, well, next time we get on together, we'll look at records of teams, we'll look at role players, we'll look at all that good stuff, and we'll see if the theory plays out. Maybe it just works itself back out to where it's normal, or maybe we start to see some things that are a little abnormal. I think it's an interesting study.
Coach, we'll definitely have you back then to discuss that in a few weeks or something. Thanks for the time, as always. Stay safe and healthy.
Much love.
Thanks,
guys.
Fizz.
Take care.
There is David Fizdale, longtime NBA assistant coach, former NBA head coach as well, ESPN analyst. We will take the break and come back. Get set to wrap up Smith and Jones and get you set for Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Back on Smith and Jones, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Want to play hockey, folks, in your own backyard this winter? Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Rinkmaster are giving away a backyard rink. Enter for your chance to win at sportsnet.ca/590. Again, we saw some action last night with the rink, albeit not in the backyard, but down on the ice at Scotiabank Arena. The Leafs with another victory. Solid start to the season for the Leafs and the Raptors. In search, Jonesy, of win number 4 in a row tomorrow as they get set for the Miami Heat.
I got to keep it going. And, you know, I know it's early to be watching the standings, but, you know, 6 wins gets you up into like 8th or something like that. And it's still, you know, a quarter of the way through. So I think this team's going to be okay. We always thought they were going to recover. Let's see what happens tomorrow.
Thanks to Alvin Williams and David Fizdale for joining us. Writer's Block comes next. We're back again tomorrow at 1 p.m. Eastern for more Smith and Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.